AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
January 4, 1960. A sleek Facel Vega sports car speeds down a long straight road in the French countryside. In the passenger seat sits 46-year-old Albert Camus, a manuscript of his unfinished novel, The First Man, in his briefcase. Suddenly, a tire bursts. The car skids and crashes violently into a plane tree. Camus is killed instantly. The world loses one of its great literary voices. A Nobel Prize-winning novelist and philosopher known for confronting the absurdity of existence and championing human dignity. The absurd irony is not lost. Camus had once written that an inescapable philosophical question was whether to go on living. Yet here his life was cut short in a random accident. Albert Camus was born in 1913 in Mondovi, French Algeria. His background was humble. His father was an agricultural worker who died in World War I when Camus was a baby, and his illiterate mother of Spanish origin raised him in a poor neighborhood of Algiers. Despite hardship, they lived in a two-room apartment. Camus later said he never forgot the silent suffering of his mother, which informed his outlook on human resilience. Camus excelled in school. He was a bright, athletic young man, passionate about football, soccer, and the outdoors of the Mediterranean. Camus attended the University of Algiers, studying philosophy, but tuberculosis struck him at 17 and recurrently thereafter, ending his athletic dreams and instilling a sense of mortality. In the late 1930s, Camus worked as a journalist and joined a left-wing anti-colonial theater group, critiquing the treatment of Algeria's Arab population. He also started writing literary works. Camus moved to metropolitan France during World War II. When the Germans occupied Paris, Camus eventually joined the French resistance. He became editor of the clandestine resistance newspaper Combat, penning stirring editorials calling for solidarity and liberty. This was a formative period. Camus believed deeply in fighting tyranny and would always emphasize concrete action and ethics over abstract theories. In 1942, in the midst of the war, Camus published The Stranger, L'Étranger, a novel that made him famous. It's the story of Mersault, an ordinary man in Algiers who, after his mother's death, drifts through life with emotional detachment. He commits an impulsive murder of an Arab on a beach, under a blazing sun that Camus describes brilliantly, and is later prosecuted more for his lack of conventional feeling, like not crying at his mother's funeral, than for the crime itself. The Stranger introduced Camus' concept of the absurd, the idea that the world is irrational and indifferent to human hopes, and that any quest for meaning will meet only a silent universe. Mersault becomes an outsider to society by refusing to fake sentiment. At the novel's end, awaiting execution, he finds a kind of peace in accepting the benign indifference of the world and acknowledging his bond with the universe. That same year, Camus also published the essay The Myth of Sisyphus, a direct philosophical exploration of the absurd. He famously begins, "There is but one truly serious philosophical problem, and that is suicide. If life has no inherent meaning, why not end it? Camus answers by asserting that recognizing the absurd is not an end, but a beginning. The proper response is to live defiantly in spite of the absurd, to revolt by embracing life passionately, even though it has no ultimate rhyme or reason. Sisyphus, condemned by the gods to roll a boulder up a mountain forever, only for it to roll back down, a futile task, is Camus's hero because one must imagine Sisyphus happy. In Camus's view, Sisyphus reaches contentment by acknowledging the absurdity of his task and continuing anyway, finding meaning in the struggle itself. This captures Camus's humanism. We create value through our actions and attitudes, even if the cosmos is silent. After the war, Camus became an international celebrity, often linked with Jean-Paul Sartre as leading voices of existentialism, though Camus rejected the existentialist label. He considered himself more a man of Mediterranean sensibilities, clarity, balance, than the darker, more system-building Sartre. Nevertheless, they were friends and intellectual allies for a time, co-editing journals and debating politics in Saint-Germain cafes. Camus's post-war writings further explored themes of revolt and justice. The Plague, La Peste, 1947, is an allegorical novel about a plague sweeping the Algerian city of Oran. It's often read as a parable about fascism or the German occupation. The town's residents must band together to fight the deadly disease. Camus portrays how ordinary people become heroes through solidarity and duty. One character, Dr. Ryu, keeps doing his job treating the sick without hope of reward or clear purpose, reflecting Camus's idea of metaphysical rebellion, resisting death and suffering even when they seem arbitrary. The Plague struck a chord in a world recovering from war, conveying a message of human decency and perseverance amid collective catastrophe. Camus also wrote The Rebel, L'Homme Révolté, 1951, a lengthy philosophical essay examining the nature of rebellion and revolution. In it, he distinguishes between rebellion that affirms shared humanity and revolution that turns totalitarian. Camus critiques the excesses of both fascism and communism in the book, attacking the idea that any utopian end justifies murderous means. This put him at odds with Sartre and other Marxist intellectuals of the time, who saw the Soviet Union as a necessary counterbalance to Western imperialism. Sartre's journal published a scathing review accusing Camus of being naive and preachy. Camus replied angrily, leading to a bitter public break between the two friends. Camus, deeply anti-Stalinist, believed Sartre was excusing tyranny out of political expediency, whereas Sartre felt Camus was morally grandstanding and failing to support oppressed colonized peoples with his focus on moderation. Their quarrel became emblematic of a larger rift in leftist thought, whether one should denounce oppression on all sides, Camus, or prioritize anti-capitalist struggle, even if it meant tolerating Soviet abuses, Sartre's initial stance. As the Algerian War of Independence erupted in the mid-50s, Camus was in a painful position. He had always advocated better treatment of Algeria's Arab population and criticized French colonial policy. Yet he also felt a strong attachment to the Pied Noir, European Algerians like himself, and feared what a violent revolution would unleash. Indeed, atrocities occurred on both sides. Camus called for a truce and mutual understanding, proposing a federated Algeria where French and Arabs lived as equals. But by then, neither the French colonial authorities nor the FLN rebels wanted compromise. Camus' pleas fell on deaf ears. Extremists on both sides disliked him. It's during this conflict that Camus made a remark often taken out of context. A heckler at a press conference accused him of ignoring Arab suffering, and Camus responded that while he wished for justice, he would defend his mother before justice, meaning that he couldn't support violence that might kill innocents like his own mother, who still lived in Algiers. Critics pounced on this as evidence of bias, but he was expressing the human priority of personal bonds over abstract causes, consistent with his philosophy of moderation and individual value. In 1957, at age 44, Camus received the Nobel Prize in Literature, one of the youngest ever to get it. The committee cited the clarity and moral depth of his work. Camus was modest about it, reportedly saying the prize was really an honor to the generation of resistance fighters he had tried to represent. he used the Nobel platform to advocate for a humanitarian solution to the Algerian conflict, sadly in vain. Camus was at the height of his fame and had many potential projects. Plays, a study on the relationship between Greece and modernity, when his life was cut short in the car crash of 1960. The manuscript with him, The First Man, was an autobiographical novel about his father and his youth in Algeria. It was published decades later, incomplete, but showed a nostalgic, tender side of Camus grappling with his heritage. Legacy, Albert Camus' legacy, rests on the values of the absurd, revolt, and humanism. He is often grouped with existentialists, but Camus himself said, if anything, he was an absurdist. The absurd, as Camus defined it, the confrontation between the human need for meaning and the indifferent silence of the universe, remains a resonant concept, influencing countless books and films. Any story that shows a character searching for meaning in a chaotic world, think of modern films like No Country for Old Men or the novel Fight Club, echoes Camus. The very idea of a heroism without God or certainty, of doing good for its own sake in a world that might destroy you anyway, is often tagged as Camusian. Camus' emphasis on personal moral choice and limits in politics foreshadowed later dissident movements and humanitarian interventions. When Eastern Bloc intellectuals in the 1960s and 70s pushed for socialist reform with a human face, they often cited Camus, not Sartre, as their inspiration. After the Cold War, Camus' distrust of ideological utopias and insistence on measured justice seemed vindicated to many. His novels remain widely read. The Stranger especially is a staple in literature classes worldwide. Its opening lines, "Today, Maman died," are among the most famous in 20th century literature. Mersault's indifferent gaze at society still sparks discussion on what makes someone moral or immoral. Is Mersault a monster for not crying at his mother's funeral, or is society monstrous for expecting artificial emotions? These questions remain intriguing to young readers. Religious and philosophical discussions find much to engage with in Camus. He was an atheist, but unlike some atheists, he didn't celebrate meaninglessness. He mourned it and then demanded we face it honestly and live on. His notion of metaphysical rebellion, saying no to death and injustice, even though we know we can't eliminate them, is inspiring across ideological lines. Even some religious thinkers admire Camus' ethic of compassion and honest confrontation with suffering. Camus' The Plague, in light of events like the COVID-19 pandemic, saw a resurgence. Its portrayal of a community dealing with quarantine, denial, and solidarity felt extremely relevant. Sales of The Plague spiked during 2020 as readers sought insight from Camus on how to live through a lethal plague with decency and courage. As a person, Camus was known for his integrity and personal warmth. He sometimes contrasted with Sartre. Where Sartre was dialectical, cerebral, often dogmatic in argument, Camus was more straightforward, emotional, and pragmatic. Some call them the mind and heart of mid-century French thought, respectively. Even their appearance symbolized it. Sartre, the small, homely intellectual. Camus, the tall, handsome loner in a trench coat. He even looked like a movie star. Viggo Mortensen played him in a recent film. This romantic image sometimes overshadows the discipline behind his writing. Camus' prose style in French is admired for its classical limpidity, influenced by his love of Greek thought and Mediterranean sun. He often invoked the sea, the sun, football matches, earthy joys that made life worth living in spite of the absurd. He once said that, in the depth of winter, he finally learned there was an invincible summer within him. That line encapsulates his outlook. Even amid despair, there is a stubborn light of hope, or at least endurance. In summary, Albert Camus remains a beacon for those who seek a life of conscience without illusions. He faced the darkest of questions. Why not suicide? Why not give in to murder or despair? And answered with simple, because there is beauty, because others need us, because we can create meaning through loving and fighting for each other. He elevated concepts like modesty, limits, and dialogue, things that get lost in revolutionary fervor, but which truly sustain a humane world. Camus died absurdly, the man who pondered the chance nature of existence taken by random chance, yet his legacy feels anything but absurd. It feels necessary. When we talk about human rights, the importance of moderation, the courage to keep living and helping others in a seemingly absurd world, we are in the realm of Camus. As he wrote in The Plague, there is more to admire in humans than to despise. That hard-won faith in our flawed but real nobility is why Camus' works continue to be read and to give comfort and resolve to new generations facing their own plagues, wars, and existential doubts.